I say to myself, God damn you! Because this is not a love without grave repercussions, and Joy's waiting game plan seems to be failing miserably. I hadn't planned on seeing Joy that evening, but I'm so upset I ask her to cancel her plans with Marcy and come to my house. It's not working, I say to Joy in a level voice, because I've cried my tears by then, and I've expelled the rage from my voice. Your mother isn't going to budge. I tell her about how Miranda all but called me a pervert, and about how she wants to retire from the firm so she doesn't have to look at my smug face anymore. Jesus, Alice. She's really losing it, Joy replies. She's really gone and lost her mind. We have done this to her, I say. Joy ignores my comment. The woman you have just described is not my mother. This is not the same person who raised me, who told me every day I was the most precious thing in her life, and who hugs me so tightly sometimes I have to peel her off me. I don't know what, but we're going to have to do something. Maybe talk to Jeff. It's not you she has the issue with, Joy. It's me. She misses you so much. She told me so. Maybe I should talk to her. However badly Mum is feeling, perhaps this is the moment we've been waiting for, and it can go either way now. Joy's tone brightens. I should go to her now. She's cracking. Maybe she'll be open to, at the very least, talk about it with me, which will be huge progress. I don't know. Maybe you should let her cool off some more. If you go over now, she might feel as though I sent you. And she will certainly get the impression we've been talking about her. Of course we talk about her. Everything she has said since we told her warrants a long discussion. Good grief, Joy. Is there a manual somewhere about this that we can consult? Can we Google the solution to this problem? This brings a tiny smile to Joy's face. Fuck it, Alice. I'm going over. I'm going to talk some sense into my mother. If only it were that easy, I think. Good luck with that. I'll be back. She kisses me hard on the lips before heading out the door. All I can do is wait and ponder once again if it's all worth it. I reprimand myself instantly for even thinking that, because I know, above all else, that it is. Joy returns not even an hour later. Mum was asleep. Apparently she took a sleeping pill, so I had to deal with Jeff, she says laconically. He was quite a good sport about it, actually. What did he say? I slide to the edge of my seat. Well, he did start by stating he thinks she's close to a nervous breakdown, because she feels so torn. She has told him that the last thing she wants is to push me away, but the second last thing she wants is me in a relationship with you. I sigh, because it feels as though it's going to be like this for the rest of time. Does Jeff have an opinion on all of this? Joy quirks up her eyebrows. When does Jeff not have an opinion? True enough. If we can't mock Jeff a little now, just to make ourselves feel better, when can we? But he was very non-Jeffy about it, actually. He said things like, I understand you can't sacrifice love to make your mother happy. Can you imagine these words coming from his mouth? It was a bit surreal. People can surprise you when you least expect it. He's going to tell Mum I stopped by, and I promise to pick up when she calls me. How are you feeling? I ask, shuffling to the side of the sofa and gesturing for Joy to come sit. Exhausted, Joy says as she crashes down next to me. She puts her head on my shoulder. This is not how it's supposed to be, Alice. We're in the honeymoon stage of our relationship. We should be having sex on this very sofa right now instead of worrying about what Mum thinks of us. I murmur. She's right. After the things Miranda said to me today, and after hearing her mentioned in a sentence referring to our sex life, the last thing I want to do is push Joy down and kiss her until the morning light. Chapter 22. As days bleed into weeks, It becomes increasingly more difficult to adhere to my split personality of trying to block out all emotions at work and being my new passionate self after hours. Miranda hasn't said anything significant to me, nor has she elaborated on her plan to retire. Until one day, from the open door of my office, I see her leave the building for the night without so much as saying goodbye to me again. Hellos and goodbyes have become a rarity. We only exchange niceties in front of clients now. And I realize I miss her. Being in the same building with her from Monday to Friday makes it much worse. I wish she'd already retired. I fully understand the sentiment now. If this is how things are going to be between us, it is just too hard. Something's going to have to give at some point. I say to Joy on a Friday evening after a day during which I've barely seen Miranda. The few times I did, it felt as though her initial rage had transformed into a deep, unspeakable sadness. In the break room that afternoon, when I walked in to fetch a cup of tea, she stood there gazing in front of her, leaning against the fridge with her hip, and I didn't meet the usual condescension in her stare, only resignation, as though she was coming to terms with the inevitable. She didn't say anything, though, just straightened her spine and walked right past me. "I miss her so much. She's my mum," Joy replies. The conversations we have seem to repeat themselves on a daily basis. "We used to speak at least every other day, even when I was in the US. I remember the astronomical phone bills, of which I never said anything to Miranda at Jones and McAllister well enough. And now, even when we do speak, it's just not the same. We dance around the subject like we're walking on a tightrope, and I can sense that she's trying, but every time the subject could possibly drift towards you, there's this silence, this unbreakable wall." "I know." We're at Joy's flat, getting ready to go out, even though I'm tired and I'd much rather stay in after the draining week I've had at work. I too miss Miranda so much. I miss her energy around me, the way we used to discuss every tiny detail of our business, not because it was necessary, but because we enjoyed doing it, because it made us feel proud and accomplished. It's ridiculous how every time I check our joint calendar, I'm relieved to find she'll be out of the office for a few hours. Earlier this week, I noticed Miranda had a gynecologist appointment scheduled for this morning. Being angry with me hasn't curbed her oversharing tendencies, although she has been adding less personal appointments to the calendar, and it could be that this particular doctor's visit has been scheduled for months. "Okay," Joy turns to me. "We've reached our limit for today." She taps her fingers against the palm of her hand. "Time out starts now." "Deal," I say, looking at myself in the mirror. "Tell me why exactly we have to go to this exhibition again after we've already attended the opening 3 weeks ago." "Because Bobby is my friend, our friend, and we want to support him on his closing night." "I'm too old for this, you know," I chuckle, because I know what's coming next. "Nuh-uh, you don't get to play the age card." Joy walks towards me and pushes me against the wall. "Because if you're too old to go out with me to a very upstanding, civilized, early activity, you are surely also too old for this." She nuzzles my neck. "And this." She sinks her teeth into my earlobe. "And for what I bought for you." That's a new one. "What did you buy?" "You'll see. Tomorrow. If you're good." Her body is still pressed against mine. Her hot breath on my face. "If I'm good." "I'm always good." I curl my arms around her neck and gaze into her eyes. Every time I look into her eyes like that, I'm reminded of the astounding transformation I have gone through by falling in love with her. "I'll be the judge of that," Joy says, before kissing me and smearing my lips with her freshly applied lipstick. At the gallery, I mainly talk to Justin. Joy teased me and said I like him so much because he's closest to me in age. But he's just a very easy person to talk to, despite the number of expletives that leave his mouth a mile a minute. We're chit-chatting next to, according to what I've been told, a picture of Justin, although you can't see Justin's face in it, and the contorted shape his body is portrayed in isn't recognizable to me at all. This one isn't for sale, only for artistic merit, Justin says as he gazes at it. Bobby wanted my face on it, but I managed to convince him my old mug is too ugly for a beautiful picture. His gaze shifts from the picture to me. Now you, though, Alice. I bet you photograph really well. You have this whole aristocratic thing going on. That patrician nose, those cheekbones, that naughty glint you get in your eyes sometimes. I mean, I can surely see why Joy is so crazy about you. By now, I've got used to Justin saying things like that to me. The first time he complimented my looks, I blushed all the way up from my shoulders to my scalp. Why, thank you, young sir, I jest, feeling more flattered than embarrassed. I'd like to introduce you to some friends of mine, if you don't mind. He starts waving at two men who are examining the picture next to the one of him. One of them must be my age, I suspect. He's wearing a suit, and his graying hair appears quite thin. The other one looks more like a teenager than a grown-up, leading me, at first, to believe that he is the older guy's son. These are Jeremy and Tim. Jeremy is one of my oldest friends, and he just got back from jet-setting around the world, where he encountered this gem of a man. Nice to meet you. Jeremy offers his hand, and I shake it. Don't believe a word this one says, by the way. I was working very hard in Singapore for 5 years, where I did, indeed, meet Tim. Hi. Tim is less formal in his greeting, and seems to sport one of those carefree American accents. So this is what it feels like for perfect strangers when they meet me and Joy, I think. Because even though I might have briefly considered that Tim was Jeremy's son, that doesn't mean I didn't instinctively know they are, in fact, a couple. I'm Alice. Very pleased to meet you. Alice is Joy's partner, Justin says while he points at Joy, who is standing a few feet away. Oh, I spoke to her earlier. What a lovely girl. You seem to have picked up some friends who are much posher than you while I was away, Jussie. Jeremy says, are you finally growing up? Nah, Justin replies. I just got tired of hanging with the trashy likes of you. They banter back and forth, while Tim and I become less and less involved in their old chum's conversation. So, you moved here from Singapore? I asked Tim, because I'm curious to find out about their situation.
Yes, quite the temperature difference, he says. Is it always so cold here?
He paints the sweetest smile on his face. I'm afraid this is nothing compared to what's yet to come. From behind him, I see Joy making her way towards me, and I'm suddenly very aware of how far removed from my old life I find myself, talking to this young man I don't know at a photo exhibition in Hoxton, where all the pictures are, quite frankly, extremely homoerotic, and not to my taste at all. Winter is coming. I have to suppress a chuckle as I say the phrase, because I only picked it up after watching a horrendously bloody and violent TV show with Joy, where that seems to be the phrase de rigueur.
Do you watch Game of Thrones?
Tim asks me with a sparkle in his eyes, and I find myself wondering if he and Jeremy watch it together, and whether Jeremy thinks it's ghastly as well. Not if I can help it. Hey, Joy says when she joins us. Hi again, Tim. Her arrival seems to snap Jeremy and Justin out of their private conversation. Are you all coming back to our house to celebrate Bobby's successful show? Justin asks. Sure, Jeremy says without consulting Tim, and I fervently hope Joy won't do the same and speak for us both without checking with me first. It's 10 o'clock. I'm tired. And I'm not the kind of person who goes back to someone else's house this late in the day. Justin eyes Joy expectantly. I need to check with my missus, she says to my great relief. Although I can tell she wants to go, and why should she not? It's Friday evening. She should go out with her friends, have too much to drink, and laugh the night away. But going out protocol is not something we have discussed at length, apart from my insistence that Joy do whatever comes natural to her. You go ahead, I say to Joy. It's way past my bedtime. I give a brief chuckle to hide how uncomfortable this is making me feel. She gazes at me for an instant to, I imagine, try to read my face. That's okay. I'll take a rain check. I'm beat too.
Ah, these youngsters, Jeremy laments. They don't make them like us anymore, do they, Jess?
With that, they slip back into their energetic conversation from before, teasing each other mercilessly. Joy stands next to me and drapes her arm over my shoulder. I really don't mind if you go, I say, wanting to make it perfectly clear that I'm cool with this.
I know, Joy whispers in my ear, but I'd rather spend time with you.
Next, she plants a gentle kiss on my cheek, and Tim is left smiling perplexedly at us, perhaps with exactly the same facial expression as I had when I looked at him and Jeremy earlier. On the way home, Joy's arm linked through mine, her body leaning into me as we walk, I ask, "How old do you think Tim is?"
"Hard to tell. He's Asian, so he's probably 40, but looks 20," Joy says.
"Why?"
"Just wondering."
I can't keep the trepidation out of my tone, though.
"Alice McAllister, don't tell me you think Jeremy is too old for him."
There's a smile in her voice.
"I don't think anything of the sort. It was just confrontational, I guess, for me to be introduced to another couple with a visible, significant age difference between them."
"How did it make you feel?" Joy leans in a bit closer. I try to find the right words before I speak.
"Not as self-conscious as I thought it would.
The strangest combinations of people fall in love, Alice. It's what makes the world go round. As long as it makes them happy. And as long as they're equals in the relationship," I add.
"What does that even mean, equals?"
Joy asks. "I stand by my words, as long as they're both happy." Just as we turn the corner into Joy's street, her phone starts ringing. She sighs.
"I bet that's Justin wanting to nag me about not accepting his invitation."
She digs her phone out of her coat pocket and stares at the screen.
"It's Mum," she says.
"This late," I say, but Joy doesn't hear me because she's already answering Miranda's call.
"Hello, Mum,"
she says.
"Mum, calm down. What's going on?"
Joy looks at me as though she has no idea what her mother is saying. If Miranda is that incoherent, she's either drunk or something terrible has happened. I'm beginning to fear the latter. Joy holds the phone away from her ear for an instant and addresses me.
"See if you can find us a taxi, Alice."
Then she goes back to calming Miranda down on the phone. All sorts of thoughts immediately flit through my brain. Did Jeff have a heart attack? Did she take a nasty fall? Frantically, I look around for a taxi. The benefit of Joy's neighborhood is that on a Friday evening, a ton of people come and go, and I manage to flag down one almost immediately. I give the driver Miranda's address, because that's where I think we're headed, then look for confirmation on Joy's face. She nods, while listening to her mother on the phone. Joy has gone silent, which leads me to believe Miranda has quietened down.
"Okay, Mum, listen, we're on our way," Joy says. "We'll be there in 15 minutes. I love you."
After Joy hangs up, she looks at me, her face drained of all color. "At her gynecologist appointment today, they found a lump in her breast. Her doctor sent her for a mammogram and ultrasound, but they don't know what it is for sure, and now she needs a biopsy."
Chapter 23. Jeff opens the door for us, then steps out and closes it behind his back to speak to us in private.
"She's had a bit too much. She's very upset," he says.
"I want to see her."
Joy's voice is urgent. She doesn't wait for Jeff to let her in, but pushes the door open and heads into the house.
"Hi, Alice," Jeff says as we shuffle inside behind Joy.
I haven't seen him since that dinner party Joy trapped me into.
"God, I'm glad you're here."
Jeff has always had a dramatic streak. Nevertheless, the words are a relief to hear.
"What do you know?"
I ask. "When I came home from work," he whispers, "she was already plastered. She was sitting on the sofa with a half-empty bottle of sherry in front of her. She told me about the lump, and the mammogram, and ultrasound, and I tried to talk to her, made her some dinner, but she just kept on drinking. He coughs. She wasn't exactly in an optimal state of mind to receive bad news, and, well, I guess it brought back some very depressing memories. Poor, poor Miranda, I think. And she didn't have her best friend to call. I vow there and then to, whether she wants me to or not, worm my way into her life again. I need her, and she needs me. When I enter the living room, Joy and Miranda are standing in a hug so tight it looks as though they can never break from it. Poor Joy, I think then. She has seen her father die from cancer, and now this. But as far as I know, and I don't know much, it could very well be benign. This is what we must focus on. Miranda is crying big, heavying sobs on Joy's shoulder, and Jeff and I just stand there, mute spectators to this mother-daughter reunion. But they need this moment together more than anything. So I wait, shuffling my weight around awkwardly, my heart in my throat. What if it's not benign? Miranda knows all about the long, torturous road of chemo and endless doctor and hospital visits, and she also knows that, no matter how good the care and how high the hopes, the outcome isn't always positive. Paul didn't survive. Moreover, Joy is Paul's daughter as well, and I was the primary cause of this rift between Joy and her mother, me, Miranda's best friend. It's so abysmal I find myself thinking in Joy terms. This is so fucked up, so bloody fucked up, and we need to fix this right now, because Miranda needs all of us by her side. The most important thing is that she doesn't feel alone, and how alone must she have felt the past weeks? She probably felt that Joy and I were against her. When they break from their hug, Miranda is wobbly on her legs, and I fear the instant she lays eyes on me. "Alice," she says, her voice breaking. I rush over to her and take her into my arms, which I haven't done since Paul's death. Miranda and I never had a hugging kind of friendship. I hold her for long moments and let it all fall away, because in the face of this, any hurtful words that have been spoken between us have no more importance. We all have a single-minded goal now, one that doesn't involve acceptance of who's with who, or early retirement because of a crumbling friendship. Miranda, Jeff, Joy, and I only want for Miranda's lump to not be life-threatening. And if it is, then we want her to get better with us by her side. Nothing is more important than that. But then, out of nowhere, or perhaps catapulted from the most selfish recesses of my brain, the thought comes to me. What if she asks me to break up with Joy now, for her sake? I push the thought away and focus on Miranda and, because this is my forte, on what needs to be done. On the next step. When are you seeing the doctor again? I'll happily clear my schedule to go with her if she lets me.
Tuesday,
she whimpers.
Biopsy.
Okay. She has a number of difficult days ahead, filled with insecurity. What do you need?
I need for this not to be cancer.
Miranda isn't the most stoic person I know, but the speed at which she's falling apart doesn't befit her personality either. But she has suffered so much already. Joy and I caused her pain. That's why she's coming undone. We're going to put you to bed now, okay? It's late. She's drunk and over-emotional. The best thing she can do is sleep it off and look at it with fresh eyes and renewed zeal tomorrow.
I'll take her, Joy offers. Her cheeks are streaked with tears.
She takes her mother by the arm.
I'll be here in the morning, Mum, she says. I'll stay the night.
I'll be right up, Jeff says, and kisses her on the cheek tenderly, while we wait for the stumbling upstairs to subside and Joy to come down. Jeff and I sit. I feel more exhausted than I've felt in months, suddenly aware of the gravity of the situation. I also scold myself inwardly for even thinking about myself in Miranda's hour of need. Perhaps I've changed into a selfish woman, I ponder, when Jeff asks me if I want a drink. I'm not sure if I should stay. If this were to have happened before Joy and I got together, I would have surely stayed in the guest room, but now, even that feels wrong. I don't know if Miranda wants me to spend the night in her house. Sure, I'll have one. Scotch, please. I'm still wearing my coat, and I shrug it off me.
No ice, Jeff says.
No ice for Alice. I wonder what he's had to endure the past few weeks. If he's really the only person Miranda has told, then I guess quite a lot.
She's going to be all right, he says, with his usual Jeff optimism. I just know it.
Look, Jeff, I start. I'm sorry for everything, for how I've hurt Miranda. I never meant to hurt her.
It's my turn to feel tears well up, but I've always been very skilled at keeping them at bay. He sighs.
Do I think it's an easy situation? He asks rhetorically.
No, I do not. But do I think the whole thing has been blown way out of proportion? He continues his questionnaire with himself.
Oh, yes, I do.
In her head, Miranda has turned you and Joy's relationship into all sorts of things it's not. He shakes his head and stares into his glass. And I kept telling her that it's only love. It's not a conspiracy or a plot against her. But, well, she didn't want to hear it.
While I do feel slightly mortified to be talking about this with Jeff, I'm also touched.
I appreciate you saying that.
That's not to say I wasn't shocked when she told me. He gives one of his loud chuckles, because Jeff is not the kind of guy who chuckles discreetly.
Honestly, I was here when Miranda called you in Portugal to ask if Joy could come over for a few days, and I believe my exact words to Joy were, "Enjoy the little time you have at the house, because I'm positive Alice is going to boot you out within the next 24 hours." Despite myself, I have to laugh at that, and I'm glad for the comic relief it brings. God, I wanted to. When she first arrived, I wanted her to be gone so much. She was just too much. The way she carried on, so reckless and not taking my feelings into consideration. But, well, she quickly won me over. While I'm not sure I should be saying these things to Jeff, the sheer relief of simply talking about Joy with another person without being scolded for it feels so unabashedly good. I can't stop myself.
But you can trust in the fact that I am most shocked of all about how things turned out. The word unexpected doesn't even begin to cover it.
Talking to Jeff makes me realize once more how much I've missed my best friend.
She's asleep.
Joy must have descended the stairs so quietly we didn't hear her come in.
I gave her a sleeping pill, so she should at least have a good night's kip.
Are you okay? Jeff asks. It's obvious Joy is still on the verge of tears.
I can't lose her as well.
There's a crack in her voice. I push myself out of the sofa and hurry towards her. I take Joy in my arms and don't feel the least bit apprehensive about Jeff witnessing our display of affection.
You are both welcome to stay, he says. That's very nice of you, I reply, while still hugging Joy, my face protruding over her shoulder as I look at him. But I'm not sure Miranda would be comfortable with that. My house is so close anyway. I'll be here first thing in the morning.
Joy pushes herself away from me.
I need you here tonight, Alice. Please.
How could I possibly refuse her? It doesn't sit entirely right with me to stay without Miranda's explicit permission. But having us both stay under her roof is still an entirely different thing to process than us being together in my house or at Joy's flat. Or perhaps it's just like that in my head.
Mum doesn't even have to know. She'll sleep late. Just please stay.
Okay, I nod. I guess I can stay in the guest room. Joy looks at me incredulously. She still has her own room in Miranda's house, but I have to draw the line somewhere, not just for Miranda's sake, but for my own as well.
Let me get that sorted for you.
Jeff finishes his scotch and gets up.
I'll get you some fresh sheets and towels. Thank you. I can see he's keen to leave the room. As soon as we hear him climb the stairs, Joy says, There's no way we're sleeping in separate bedrooms. Not tonight.
Joy, honey, I understand how you feel, but we need to show at least a modicum of respect for your mother's wishes. It just doesn't feel right.
I'm not asking you to fuck me, Alice. Just hold me and be there when I wake up.
Just put yourself in Miranda's shoes. What if she wakes up in the middle of the night and goes to check on you and finds me in your bed?
Alice, you're overthinking this. First of all, there's no way she's going to wake up in the middle of the night after taking that pill. And second, we'll both sleep in the guest room, and she would never check there, nor would she check my room for that matter. If it makes you feel any better, I'll set my alarm for 6, so we're both up and about by the time anyone else wakes up.
This is the first time I can clearly feel the duality of wanting to be there for Miranda as a friend, and wanting the same thing for Joy, but as her partner. No matter which option I choose, I'll be going against my instincts. I can't win. So, in the end, of course, I choose to sleep with Joy. If just to erase that forlorn look on her face, tonight of all nights.
Okay. I pull her to me again. I love you,
I whisper in her ear when I embrace her. Because I do.
I remember when you stayed here after Dad died.
Joy says when we're both tucked under the covers. I'm wearing one of Miranda's nightgowns. I was hardly going to crawl into bed with Joy naked. She offered me one of the tank tops she sleeps in, but it just looked too ridiculous.
You did everything for us. You cooked. You made me sandwiches when I knew the school lunch was going to be horrible, which was most of the time.
I must have stayed in this room for 3 weeks, because I didn't want to leave Miranda alone with all her grief. A few months later, long after I'd gone back to my own house, I suggested she sell the house and start making memories in a new place, unfettered by the memory of all the years she'd spent in that house with Paul. But she wouldn't have any of that. Instead, not even 6 months later, Jeff moved in. The way Miranda rushed into that, clearly driven by grief, I never thought it would last.
You were so fussy. You brought home a piece of paper with the school menu, showed it to me, and said, I don't like that, and that, and that.
You're a good person, Alice. That's all I'm trying to say.
She scoots a little closer. I've always remembered that about you.
It's what friends do. You miss Mum too, don't you?
She whispers, as though it's too hard a question to say out loud.
I do,
I confess, trying to not convey with my tone of voice exactly how much.
I'm so scared, Alice.
Joy's voice grows even softer.
I'd give anything to not have to go through that again.
I know, sweetheart.
I know.
I cradle her more snugly in the crook of my shoulder. But no matter what happens, you won't be alone. I'm here. In the back of my mind, I can't help but wonder, though, what or who exactly she'd give up for Miranda not to have cancer. The next morning, Joy's alarm rouses us at 6 o'clock. With all the night activity that's been crammed into my schedule, my sleeping pattern has changed of late, and I'm still tired when I open my eyes. Joy, however, seems wide awake.
Did you get some sleep?
I ask.
No, not really,
she says. Every time I started drifting off and let my mind go, I could only think of one thing. Mum coming down the stairs after Dad died, the look on her face. She didn't even have to say anything because I knew. I somehow felt it. And even though we knew it was inevitable and it could happen at any time, it was still so devastating, and nothing at all could console me. Not even the thought that at least now he wouldn't be in pain anymore. It was just so utterly awful.
I know, honey, I know.
I guess that's when I decided that I was just going to live my life and not care what anyone thought of me, you know? In memory of Dad, it felt like something I had to do for him. It was also very much how he lived.
You know what kind of a loudmouth, bordering on arrogant man he was. He just didn't care. When he died, all I wanted was to become more like him. I think I succeeded. You are a brave, honest, good-hearted woman, Joy. I know Paul would be immensely proud of you. What would he think of us, though? What if he were still alive, Alice? What would he have to say about us sharing a bed in his house?
Good question. Paul has been dead for so long, it seems like a waste of time to even consider his possible opinion. But it's a good moral compass thinking exercise. You knew him best, I say, because I really have no clue what he would have thought of me being with Joy this way. It's hard to say, of course, because it's been so long now, and I only remember the best parts of him, and, at his best, I'm not saying he wouldn't have minded, but I don't think he would have objected to it the way Mum has. I bet she wished she could have had my other parent present for this, to ask him for advice on how to handle it all. I like to believe that he would have put his hands on my shoulders the way he used to and said, "Joy Perkins, you go out and live your life, and don't compromise." I can see him saying that. It's true. "Don't compromise" was Paul's go-to phrase. Then a stumbling noise in the hallway makes us jump. Oh, shit. Joy seems frazzled as well. I'll go see if it's Mum or Jeff. Joy slips from underneath the covers and chastely puts on the robe that is hanging from the back of the bedroom door. When the door shuts behind her, I lie back, listening with one ear to the noise beyond the wall, and thinking about what a strange weekend it has already been, and it has only just started. Then all I can think of is how much I hope Miranda will be okay. This family is so close to unraveling already. Another cancer case will be the end of it, literally and figuratively. If the lump is malignant, and Miranda doesn't pull through, Joy won't have any parents left alive anymore. That's just not right for someone who hasn't even turned 30 yet. Not that losing your parents is easy at any age. My own mother died of a stroke when she was 68. My father, not long after, at the age of 75, of a heart attack. I'm genetically predisposed for cardiovascular disease, I used to say to Miranda when she was on my case about my rigid workout schedule, which I've severely neglected since falling in love with Joy, and my healthy salads for lunch. If I don't do this, I may not make it past retirement. Keep working the way you do, and you won't make it past 60, she said, which I always shrugged off because work always energized me more than it stressed me. But I see now that she had a point. Life is too fragile to just let it pass you by. I only have to think about the woman at the other end of the hallway to hammer that point home to myself. It was just Jeff. He's making breakfast in bed for Mum. Joy drops the robe on the floor and clambers back into bed with me. She's still out like a light, apparently. I'm glad I didn't let you go, I say out of the blue. I'm glad I didn't let anything stand in our way. I'm glad too, Joy says, while she slips her body half over mine. And I love you too. Chapter 24. On Tuesday, I'm the one accompanying Miranda to her biopsy. Jeff offered to go with her, but Miranda wanted only me to come. It's a girl thing, she told him, but I guess she wanted to spare him in a way. Being the spouse of a seriously ill person is no walk in the park, a fact Miranda is more than well aware of. Besides, Alice and I need to catch up. By then, we have had more personal conversations in one weekend than in the two previous months combined, culminating in a legendary statement from Miranda saying, "If this is benign and I don't have cancer, you can call me your mother-in-law, Alice. I will be so over the moon and will have put everything in so much perspective that I won't give a damn anymore." Granted, she uttered these words after a fair number of large G&Ts, but still, I hope to be able to remind her of them in due course. Listen, Miranda says now. At the risk of sounding overly dramatic, and like we're starring in an episode of Casualty, she grabs hold of my arm in the back of the taxi. If anything happens to me,
I mean, if worse comes to worst, promise me you won't let Joy fall apart. Promise me you'll be there for her, Alice, no matter what. I need to know that. I need you to promise me that.
There's a hitch in her voice, and she looks out of the window, unable to face me.
Nothing of the sort will happen to you.
I put a hand on hers, and I can feel that she's trembling. She's scared and nervous. So am I.
You don't know that. When Paul first went into hospital, they gave him an 80% chance of survival. And he's been dead for 14 years.
I know. But at this stage, we don't know anything yet, really.
I know that I'm scared. I'm scared of my daughter having to lose me now, after she's already had to lose her father so young.
I can tell this is important to her, so I decide to humour her, even though all this talk is much too defeatist.
Whether it's malignant or not, you will beat this, Miranda, I say. But I promise you that in the very unlikely case of anything happening to you, I will take care of Joy.
I hesitate.
I love her. I will do anything I can for her.
Did I go too far? Should I not have said that in front of Miranda, who is still looking out of the window?
I know you love her. Why else would you go through the torment of being with your best friend's daughter? In the end, that has been the most consoling fact. Perhaps the very thing that pushed me over the edge once I could think about it with a clear head. I know you so very well, and, in spite of accusing you of being menopausal and delusional, I know that you wouldn't have chosen to be with her if you didn't really, unequivocally care for her and love her.
I know it's hard, I whisper, wondering what the cabbie must think, but then remembering Joy's words from Saturday morning. I decided not to care any more what anyone else thinks of me.
It's been hard on me, too.
Miranda inhales deeply, and from the corner of my eye I see her turning towards me.
You make her happy. She's a different person now, although I assume the current circumstances have something to do with that as well. But I've never seen her this relaxed, so at ease with herself. Not since she came back from the States, where, let's face it, she only fled to because she couldn't bear Jeff living in our house, and she wanted to punish me. If it's any consolation, I still fail to grasp exactly what happened to me. Every single morning I think to myself, is this really happening? But it is, and what can I say? I've never been so happy either.
I know. That's what aggravated me the most about seeing you at the office. I was sitting there fuming while I could actually see the physical change in you. God, it only made it worse to think that my daughter had that effect on you. You're not the same Alice as the one who left for Portugal. I should never even have suggested you take a break from work and insisted you go on holiday. She gives a heartfelt giggle. I basically pushed her into your arms.
I should have disagreed with you more strongly when you called,
I reply. I knew you wouldn't protest too much, Alice. You're simply too good-natured.
Well, it is your house. What was I going to say?
Miranda grins. I also know you would never have made the slightest move to seduce Joy, not even if you were suddenly experiencing feelings for her. I know full well how she prances about the villa, without a care in the world or a shred of clothing on her body. Believe me, Alice, I insisted she not do that while you were in the house with her. I explicitly told her how uncomfortable that would make you feel. But Joy doesn't listen to me when it comes to certain matters. Well, most matters, actually. Maybe I was too lax with her after Paul died. I don't know. All I know is that when that girl sets her mind to something, she usually gets it. Be it a college education in California, or my best friend as her lover. The taxi stops. We've arrived at the hospital. It's go time. I go through the registration process with Miranda, but I can't go into the treatment room with her. I take a seat in the waiting area and wait, all the while thinking that if this is our happy ending, It's a really dubious one. I've taken the entire day off to spend with Miranda. On the way back to her house, she's quiet. It will take a week until we get the results, and it's going to be a long, agonizing one. Maybe you should go away, I offer, to Portugal. Start practicing for that early retirement you're so keen on. God, Alice, I said some god-awful things to you. I am sorry. I hope you know that. There's really no need to apologize. There is. Last Friday, after I returned from that disastrous doctor's appointment and the extra unexpected tests I was subjected to, I went home and sat staring at my phone. I didn't want to call Joy because I didn't want to alarm her unnecessarily. I was only going to tell her after I'd had the needle biopsy and if the outcome was bad because I didn't want to scare her for nothing. I really, really wanted to call you. But then the spiral of gloomy thoughts started up in my head again. It was Friday late afternoon. You'd be on your way out, quite possibly to see Joy, and I got so angry again. Not because you were seeing Joy per se, but because you weren't at my disposal. You're my friend, Alice. You have been for decades. And I needed you so badly in that moment because nobody else would do. Not Jeff with his relentless optimism, nor any of my other friends because they're not you. They haven't seen me at my worst the way you have. I know that I could only accept the words, "It's going to be all right," from your lips in that dreadful moment, and you weren't available to me. That's why I hit the sherry. Then I got so drunk, not even Jeff could keep me from calling Joy. I shouldn't have done that. I shouldn't have done so many things, but hell, I was hardly thinking about the big picture. The only thing I could think of was how you had abandoned me for my daughter, and when I saw you at work, I wanted to scream, "What about me, Alice? What about all the time we used to spend together? What about my feelings?" She grabs my hand again. I can hear her sniffing away some tears. "So, I am truly sorry for the way I treated you. Who am I to blame you for falling in love with someone as wonderful as Joy? If it makes you feel any better, I will gladly accept your apology, but I'm hardly innocent in this matter. I could have said no. I could have put you first, because I knew how hard this would be for you. But why would you do that, when, as long as I have known you, you have always put me first? You've held up the business while I was busy raising my child, when I lost my husband, and when I started working less. You have always been there for me, and the one time you needed my understanding, I turned into a monster. I think you're being a bit too hard on yourself, I say. Neither one of us expected you to embrace our relationship. It's a bit too complex for that. True. But I could have been easier on you. I could have been a tad more forgiving. Even Jeff asked me at a certain point whether I was willing to go as far as losing you both over it, while all you and Joy had done wrong in my eyes was fall in love. She rummages in her purse for a tissue. When she doesn't find one, I hand her one from the full packet I always carry with me. The things I said to him after that. She shakes her head while wiping her nose. It wasn't pretty. It's all perfectly understandable, I say, while rejoicing on the inside because, by the sound of it, I have my best friend back. I can only hope, with everything I have, that I get to keep her for a very long time to come. Tell me it's going to be all right, Alice. I need to hear it from you again. Miranda Jones, this time next week, we'll be having a massive party with bottle after bottle of champagne because we'll be celebrating the good outcome of your biopsy. You're my best friend, and my life is not the same without you, so I simply refuse to lose you. Thank you. She leans her head on my shoulder the way Joy does sometimes, and I noticed how I've become much more comfortable with tactile displays of friendship. Say, Alice, I have been meaning to ask you, now that you're, a lesbian, have you,
ever been attracted to me?
I guffaw at her question, then try to reply in a steady voice.
No, Miranda, it's not like...
I'm just pulling your leg, Alice. She slaps my thigh.
For Christ's sake!
I bump her away from me with my shoulder. After she stops snickering, because this is obviously very funny to Miranda, I say, I never had the chance to tell you, but I ran into Alan a few weeks ago.
You did?
She turns to me fully.
Yes.
It was a random encounter. I don't share with Miranda the reason for my long walk that day. I just ran into him when I walked into a pub I'd never set foot in before. We sat down for a drink, but as soon as I sat across from him, I was appalled at the thought of spending any time at all with him. Not because I still hate him for leaving me for Cheryl. I got over that a long time ago. But because of what he stood for. Everything I didn't want in a significant other. My life could have been so different if we hadn't divorced. And it was as though I could see it flash before my eyes.
Did he look that bad? Miranda jokes.
No, not even. He looked like a perfectly acceptable middle-aged man. A man who takes proper care of himself, and who's comfortable enough in his skin.
So, Miranda begins, are you a lesbian now?
I don't know. I actually truly don't. If the singular definition of a lesbian woman is as simple as a woman who has fallen in love with another woman, then I guess I am.
I shrug. I'm not too worried about defining myself, though. I am much more worried about keeping you as my friend.
I will always be your friend, Alice. We're like a couple in a very long relationship. We can basically finish each other's sentences, but... Another pause. Maybe we will need some rules. You can talk to me about almost everything, of course, but when it concerns joy, there will be certain things I don't want to hear. I didn't have a total personality transplant. I'm not in the habit of pouring out my heart to you. I will always be who I am in that regard. You can tell me all the things she refuses to, however. Like what time she makes it home on the weekend, and if she's doing any recreational drugs.
Miranda looks at me expectantly, then bursts into a smile.
I'm just kidding.
She chews her bottom lip for an instant. All jokes aside, you have changed. You have less of a stick up your ass, if I may be so bold as to use such language.
Only today, I reply. Today you can say anything you want to me.
What do you mean, only today? I could very well have cancer next week, Alice. At least give me until then.
You don't have cancer, I say, my voice sounding much more convinced than I ever realistically could be. Who's going to give me hell if you do?
Seconds later, the taxi pulls up to the curb of Miranda's house. When we go inside, both Jeff and Joy are there. Jeff had taken the day off work, but Joy had told me that, having only just started at her new job, she wasn't able to take a day off yet.
Surprise, she says. I made your favorite cake, Mum.
The house smells delicious.
Come here, darling.
Miranda tugs Joy towards her. I still don't think you should have seduced poor defenseless Alice, but you're the best daughter a mother could ask for.
Chapter 25. So, Alice, Joy says the next Saturday afternoon. Jeff has taken Miranda on an impromptu trip to the Cotswolds to take her mind off the impending biopsy result. They're due back on Sunday evening, which gives Joy and me some time for just the two of us.
Yes? I look up from the book I'm reading. It's the Lee Child book I never got to finish in Portugal.
Remember, before all hell broke loose last weekend, I told you I had something for you.
Oh yes, that's right. I had totally forgotten about that.
What do you have for me, Joy?
She sits there with a massive twinkle in her eyes. I have absolutely no idea what she could have got me, or what the occasion would be to give me a present.
Well, I brought it with me. Let me just go and get it from my bag.
She rises.
Actually, I think you should come upstairs with me. I think it's better if I show you in the bedroom.
A tingle sprouts from my stomach. What is she up to? Okay. I put down my book and look at her. She's leaning against the chimney now, and the sparkle in her eyes has possibly got even bigger. Come on. She turns on her heel and dashes up the stairs, brimming with curiosity and somehow knowing it's going to be a gift that will make me blush. I follow her. By the time I make it to the bedroom, she's sitting on the bed with a wrapped rectangular box in her hands. You know I love you, Alice. I'm actually completely besotted with you, and I guess, now that Mum has given us her blessing, I would like to take things to the next level. A quick wave of panic hits me. Is this one of those lesbian things I read about on the internet, about moving in after the second date and proposing marriage after only a few months together? That doesn't fit with the box she's holding, though. Nor does it gel, I think, with Joy's personality. Yes, I say hesitantly. Well, here you go. She hands me the package. Perhaps she wrapped the keys to her flat in an elaborate wooden box, although we've been spending more and more time at my house because it's closer to her mother and, without any pomp or circumstance, I handed her a key to my front door a few days ago. I take the wrapped box from her and shake it about a bit. It's very light. Then curiosity gets the best of me, and I start tearing the paper off while trying to remember when someone gave me a present last. It was probably Miranda for my birthday last year. When all the wrapping paper has come off, I see a plastic box with, inside, on full display, a penis-shaped object in all the colours of the rainbow. I can't help but stare at it in silence for long seconds. I'm not looking at Joy at all, but it's as though I can sense her sitting there very pleased with herself for some reason. Do you know what that is? She asks, her voice all sugary and sweet. I think I have an idea. I stammer. I haven't lived that sheltered a life not to recognize this particular object when I see it in my own hands. But never had I thought that this was the present Joy was going to give me. How do you feel about my gift? Joy slides a bit further onto the bed, slips her legs under her bottom, and regards me as though she's interviewing me for Newsnight. How do I feel about it? A little apprehensive, I guess. A tad insecure, and, come to think of it, incredibly aroused. Why does it have these colours? I ask. No reason, Joy says. I just like them best. She slants her head to the side. Do you want to take it out of the box? Take a closer look. Joy's voice is growing lower in pitch. I can almost see the excitement grow in her glance. This is turning her on greatly. Sure. I sit down next to her and fumble with the box until I hold its contents in my hands. This is a dildo, I think, and it's not a thought I've ever had in my life, and it doesn't fail to instantly connect with that pulsing beat between my legs. Inside the box, there's a soft black pouch, and, uncontrollably impatient as she seems, Joy takes it out, opens it, and shows me what's inside. It comes with this. She holds an intricately intertwined black ribbon in her hands. These are the straps, she says. I see, I say. Straps for what? I want to ask, but don't want to come across as completely ignorant. It's a strap-on harness, Joy says, her voice almost liquid. You put the dildo in like this. She picks up the rainbow-coloured contraption and holds it in front of the hole in the larger padded piece of fabric to which the ribbons are attached. And I really, really, really would like to fuck you with it. Would you now? I ask. My own voice seems to have dropped an octave as well. I can't hide my arousal at seeing Joy with her hands all over this toy she has bought and, despite my initial confusion, especially at what she just said. Oh, yes, Joy says, but must have somehow picked up on my trepidation or my hesitation when she explained to me how it works. It doesn't have to be now. Whenever you feel ready. Our eyes meet, and she may very well want to display patience with her words, but in her glance I see none. Do I want this? Of course.
I'm staring into Joy's lust-filled eyes, and when I do, I want everything she wants, and possibly even more. And I want to know what it feels like. Joy has clearly done this before, otherwise she wouldn't appear so utterly excited about it. I might be ready now, I say, because, oh, how my blood is beating in my veins and how my heart is racing. Yeah? She sinks her teeth into her bottom lip and inches towards me. So close I can feel her body heat radiate onto me. I can smell my brand of soap on her, and Joy, so close to me, is always intoxicating. Oh, yes, I reply, and kiss her. Instantly she pulls me to her, and while, when we usually kiss, we gradually move into a more frantic, more urgent rhythm, this kiss is intense from the very beginning, like a clear declaration of intent. Maybe this is taking it to the next level, then. You drive me crazy, Alice, Joy says when we break from our lip lock. You know why? No, I say, while I grab for her neck again. Her lips are by my ear when she speaks next. Because you're such a proper lady outside the bedroom, but inside, you're up for anything. That drives me so, so wild. Only for you, I whisper, not even sure she can hear me. But it doesn't matter because Joy has started to push me down onto the bed, and I willingly let her. She kisses my lips, then my neck, then lets her lips travel down the opening of my blouse until she can't go any further. Let's get these off, she says. And when she looks at me, I see all her love for me blazing in her eyes, and it makes me slip right into the divine state of abandon, that state where one moment I'm dressed, and the next, as though I myself had nothing to do with it, I'm naked, and ready for Joy to do whatever she wants with me. I push myself up and get my clothes off as quickly as I can, because my own patience has run out as well. We've had such an emotionally demanding week, with barely any time for each other. And though it's been cathartic in a way to have Miranda back in our lives, it has also been stressful to wait for the test results. I want my mind to go empty. I crave that blank space where thoughts cease and I'm just my body. A body Joy knows how to manipulate expertly. Let me see if I still know how to do this, Joy says, and scoots off the bed. She grabs the toy and the harness, inserts one into the other until an almost obscene image of her emerges, although the silly rainbow colours do take away from that a bit. She steps into the contraption and starts fastening the straps around her hips and behind. She does it so confidently, without any display of nerves whatsoever, the way she always is in bed with me, coaxing me through the highest high as though it's her only expertise in life. That, by the time she's fully strapped on, my blood is beating so hotly in my veins, I need her back in bed with me pronto. But she stands there for an instant, a defiant glint in her eyes, as if she wants to say, "Look how far I got you, Alice. Look how incredibly aroused I have made you. You'd better be ready for this because I'm going to give you the time of your life." It's such a typical Joy stance. It's basically how she seduced me. That youthful, unbridled confidence she has won me right over with. Come here, I whisper, because I have a voice too, and I've learned how to express my needs with it. She sits on the bed almost reverently, as if this is a big moment for us. Maybe it is. It will certainly be a new experience for me. The dildo protrudes from between her legs, and because of the colours, it could be a comical display. It's anything but. I love you, Joy says, and bows down to kiss me. And I consider these three simple words, how they have changed my life, how they can have so much meaning, although, according to what Joy has told me, in the US they've become more of a catchphrase than an expression of deep feelings. One of the reasons she had to get out of there, she claimed. And it's all these little facts she fills my day-to-day life with that have changed everything for me on such a grand scale. Like a ripple effect, her coming into my life, with this huge giant bang of orgasm after orgasm in Portugal, followed by all the introspection we had to subject ourselves to because of who we are and the relationships we have,
and all the tidbits she has shared. How she brought me outside myself and broke the shell I was living my comfortable but, truth be told, emotionless life in. It's all the little things and the big things that have made us who we are today. Here in my bedroom, a late afternoon autumn sun slanting through the window. But what's about to happen now, I would definitely catalogue under the big things. I love you too, I say. A simple truth, a life-changing statement, a sentiment that's about to come to its full, most glorious expression. Joy maneuvers herself on top of me, and I feel the dildo press against my thigh. And to have this other thing, this object not part of our bodies, but strangely part of hers anyway, in bed with us is exhilarating because of what it promises. Another new sensation. I've had so many the past few months, and I'm really proud of myself for taking everything in my stride so quickly. Not easily, but with consideration and courage. She fondles my breast with her right hand, while she kisses me again, and I can feel her love for me every time our lips touch. Because Joy has changed too. At first, I couldn't possibly fathom what a girl like Joy would want with middle-aged, repressed me. But she has shown me what and who I am to her. And she has gradually revealed the real me to myself. This is she, I think. This is me. A woman about to be fucked by her lesbian lover with a strap-on dildo. When I think back to the woman who boarded that plane to Portugal at the beginning of August, she and I could not be further removed from each other, in spirit as well as everything else. Joy's hand meanders down, and I know what she will find. And I also know what she's going to say, because she's the kind of person who likes to say things out loud, a fact that never fails to turn me on even more. God, you're so wet, Alice. I smile, because there's arousal in familiarity too. Oh God, there is. I want Joy over and over again, until she's taken all of me, and even then, if she were to ask me, I would still spread my legs for her. Because when we're like this, in this bubble of supreme intimacy, there's nothing I wouldn't do for her, for us. Before I know it, Joy's finger has slipped inside me, and she keeps kissing me, and the dildo keeps pressing against my thigh, and I can't wait for her to enter me with it. A desire I didn't even know I possessed grabs hold of me, and makes me react swifter to the thrusting motion of her fingers, two now, and makes me groan into her mouth as her tongue swirls inside mine. Fuck me, Joy, I say for the first time ever. Fuck me with the dildo. It's a word I'd never thought I'd say, and it intensifies the heat in my blood, the throbbing between my legs, the way my wet, wet sex wraps itself around her fingers. She smiles down at me. The best thing about Joy, who is someone who likes to talk about every little thing, is that she does also know when to shut up. Now is one of these moments, because no words are needed now. This might be a new experience, but it's one so inherently natural, so of all times and of all people, that we can just go with the flow we've created. Joy pushes herself away from me for an instant and repositions herself between my legs. She looks at me down there and flicks her tongue over her lips. She's like a predator, like she's the cougar about to devour her prey. She scuttles closer, presses my legs farther apart until I feel the dildo make contact. It's a shocking sensation, but not as shocking as when she starts rubbing the head along my lips, her fingers trailing behind it. She avoids my clitoris wisely, just drags the tip of the toy along my lips, up and down, until she rests it at my entrance. She rubs her palm along its length, spreading my juices over it, and the sight of that makes me gasp for air again, and I was already so out of breath. Then she shifts her hips and starts to slide in ever so slowly. It's an entirely new feeling to have this foreign object slipped into me. It's wide and filling and long. Inside me it feels so much bigger than when I looked at it. I feel stretched, inhabited, taken. And it's the best feeling in the world. Joy has moved her upper body so it's supported by her arms, which are planted just above my shoulders. She looks into my eyes as she gradually increases the speed of her motion. She's fucking me, I think. She's actually doing this. I'm actually doing this. And isn't that the strangest thing of all? Me lying here, on my very own bed, the one I've slept in for decades, with another woman on top of me who is fucking me like this. But I don't have any inclination to think further than that, because I've reached that particular headspace again. The one where it's just the most exquisite white noise occupying my brain, where all thoughts cease, where nothing is more important than what is happening to my body right now. And a lot is happening as Joy's thrusts arouse me more and more. I get carried away by the intensity of the moans coming from my own throat, and Joy's narrowed eyes on me, and the slight grunting sound she makes every time she pushes into me, and how the girth of the dildo stretches me wider than I've ever felt, and how it touches a spot inside me. Ugh! I moan, still slightly unaccustomed to the sound of my own voice when it goes high-pitched and loose like that. Oh, Joy groans in response, and it's though we're working in tandem to give me the utmost pleasure, although she's really doing all the work. She increases the motion of her hips, makes it faster still, and I wrap my legs around her behind, tether her to me, as though I never want to let go again. I don't. Then the delicious crash is inevitable. She has taken me to a new high, a plane so out of this world I see everything in a new golden light. I feel my blood beat. I feel my skin zing with excitement. I feel the drop of sweat sliding down my temple. I feel the thrust of the dildo inside every cell of my body. I'm purely a physical being, freed of all emotion that may possibly harm me or depress me or stress me. I'm just me in my purest form until I start plummeting down from that high, and Joy catches me. She always does. Oh, my God! I holler. Oh! 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 The orgasm that takes me is so strong, so obliterating, my eyes fill with tears. Joy slows her strokes and looks at me with a sweet smile on her face, as though she can't quite believe it herself. It happened, I want to say, but the lump in the back of my throat is so big, no words can get past. Instead of speaking, I pull her to me and shower her in kisses, while she slowly lets the dildo slip from me. You're everything, I want to say. Everything I've ever wanted, and so much more. But I don't even have to say it, because she knows. After what she has just done to me, she surely knows. Chapter 26. Screw the job, Joy says, when I ask her if she's sure she can take the time off. I want to be there for Mum when she gets the news. We're at the Jones and McAllister office, where she has come to pick up Miranda to take her to her doctor's appointment, the one where she'll get the results. And let's be honest here, Alice. If they decide to fire me, I could easily be a kept woman. She lets her gaze sweep over my office. You've basically worked enough hours in your life to cover my career. She pins her gaze on me again. And here I was thinking you'd be supporting me in my old age. I lean back in my chair. It's strange to have her here in my office, to mix this very personal thing with business, although I guess it has always been very intertwined, what with Miranda and I being friends first and business partners second. You know I'm only with you for your body and your exquisite mind, Alice, not for your money. But, come to think of it, nursing home fees are so steep these days. I think I will tell Mum I no longer agree with her early retirement plan. Last night, over dinner at Miranda's, we danced around the subject of a positive or negative outcome as best we could. But Miranda did express a renewed interest in retiring sooner rather than later, perhaps in a year or two. Not because she can't bear to face me in the office every day, but because she wants to travel more, enjoy life more, and not have the burden of running a business and all the stress it causes. I could hardly disagree because I, too, have felt a subtle shift. Work is no longer the first thing on my mind when I wake up in the morning and stare into Joy's face. The next day's to-do list no longer occupies any space in my brain before I close my eyes. because joy is there to erase the slightest inkling of it. Over lunch, I often venture out, even if I don't have an appointment I need to get to, just to be outside and get swallowed into the humdrum of the city and, quite simply, forget about work for half an hour. Not only has my personal life changed, my perspective on work has shifted as well. Maybe Miranda and I should both retire. I can hardly believe the words coming from my mouth, but Joy is right. At only 51, I have worked enough hours to fill the course of 2 full-time careers. And for what? As much as I enjoy my work, I find pleasure in many other activities now, and maybe it's time to start enjoying those more. Hold your horses, Alice. Joy regards me with an amused look on her face. Whatever would you do with yourself all day while I'm grafting hard targeting Facebook and Twitter ads? I don't know. Perhaps try to wrap my head around what exactly it is you do at work. Joy has tried to explain it to me many times, but I don't seem to have a brain willing to grasp her core business. And cook you dinner? Do your laundry? Bring you lunch? Just be a relaxed housewife? Trust me. You turn into one of those women who start on the cabinet at 11 in the morning for lack of something else to do. You're a doer, a worker. You need stimulation. Maybe we'll take on a new partner, and I'll work part-time then. A knock on the door stops our conversation, which perhaps isn't finished, or perhaps it is. Maybe my work is too much a part of me to let go just like that. Who's going to work part-time? Miranda asks. Her posture is rigid, her features tense. No one, just yet, I reply. How are you feeling? Rather stressed, Miranda says. Come on, Mum. Joy curls an arm around Miranda's shoulder. We'll make an afternoon of it after we've had the good news. A mani-pedi and all that. Call me as soon as you know. I instruct them both and then, completely uncharacteristically, leap from my chair to give Miranda a hug. We will, Joy says solemnly, before they both saunter off, and I'm left waiting again, not knowing what to do with myself. Within the next hours, all our lives could dramatically change. If Miranda has cancer, voluntary retirement won't even be an option anymore. Our lives will change into what they were when Paul got sick. A perpetual cycle of dashed hope, followed by picking ourselves up again, because what other choice will we have? No, I tell myself. Stop it. Even if Miranda's lump turns out to be cancerous, it doesn't mean that it will kill her. But despite the excellent breast cancer survival rates these days, it's just harder to imagine it won't, when you've seen it happen before. I try to focus on work, but my gaze is glued to my phone screen. While I simultaneously want it to ring and dread the moment it will. Almost 2 hours after Miranda and Joy left the office, I've driven myself near mad with reasons why it would take so long to deliver a simple result. Finally, my phone rings, and it's Miranda. Hello, I say with a trembling voice. Alice! Miranda's voice is as high-pitched as I've ever heard. Oh, Alice! She says, almost gasping. It's not cancer. It's fibroadenoma, and it's benign. Oh, thank Christ, I whisper into the phone. I'm so happy for you, Miranda. We're going out to celebrate. You don't have meetings this afternoon, do you? Come and join us, please. Jeff is coming as well. It will be my utmost pleasure. A tension that's been building in my muscles for days finally releases, and, again, totally against my character, I feel tears well up. Miranda tells me where to meet them, after which I quickly hang up and head to the ladies' room. I dab my tears away and hope no one will come in while I stare at myself in the mirror. This is your time, I tell my reflection. Don't waste your life on things that don't matter any longer. I nod at myself, agreeing with myself, straighten my spine, and walk out. When I find Joy and Miranda, Jeff hasn't arrived yet, at the Oxo Tower bar sipping champagne, I kiss Joy fully on the lips in front of her mother, and I know that I no longer have to care about what Miranda might think. I hug Miranda for a long time, sit down, sip from the glass she's poured me, and look at the pair of them, my best friend and my partner, the two people I love most in the world, and I can't think of a place I'd rather be right now than here. I love you both, I say, and raise my glass. And Miranda, I hope you remember that promise you made last week. Miranda looks at me over the rim of her glass. That you get to call me mother-in-law, she asks. Over my dead body, Alice, and I plan to live for a very long time. I find Joy's gaze, and the look she gives me warms me to the core. This concludes Seasons of Love by Harper Bliss, narrated by Carmen Rose. Copyright 2016 by Harper Bliss. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with Lady Lit, a division of QPS Projects Limited, and was produced in the year 2016 by Tantor Media Incorporated, a division of Recorded Books, which holds the copyright thereto. Please visit tantor.com for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks and to take advantage of special offers.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.